Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome back to Geeking In. I am Jay, I'm your party host. So grab your bourbon, your beer, or your brew, half sugar and almond milk, just the way you like it, and strap in for us talking about some random stuff. For some reason, I almost went with standard, which I suppose random is standard for us, but still, it's not the most compelling of, like, you know, hey guys, listen while we talk about some boring shit. But that voice you heard was the invincible, the infamous, our futurist, our Tony Stark, the never standard. Hey, Dunty.
Hello, listeners. Hello, gents. I'm doing very well. I'm glad to be here.
And we are also joined by Mr. Fantastic himself, our flexible friend, the pajama prince that was promised. Hey, Dunty.
Yo, my matey.
What the fuck?
It's a special shout out to our East End listeners, apparently.
Why was it so high pitched?
That's how everyone talks in the East End, no? You don't watch EastEnders then?
No. I will now. Is that your recommendation?
I mean, you realise EastEnders is on BBC One and not CBeebies, don't you? Uh-oh, what's Dot up to today? But, yes.
Pirate show thing you were doing. Captain Pugwash bullshit.
But, yeah. So, yeah. Because of our listeners from Hebel Hempstead to Dublin to Oregon to Wolford, apparently. HMS Wolford, maybe. Thank you for continuing to rate, review, subscribe and share and get involved in the conversation. And at Geeking In Pod is where you go to request your dialect shout outs by the sound of things, both on Instagram and Twitter. And whilst you are there, you will be able to find our Linktree link in our profile that takes you everywhere we are, including Teesprings, which sell our T-shirts, our mugs, and our masks. Really easy, great interface, great site. No problems at all getting your orders through. Absolutely straightforward and no drama. Unlike the set of the Batman, apparently. Oh. Which is... awash with reports of drama. So Warner Brothers apparently seem to think that they are on to a winner here, with reports suggesting that they think Robert Pattinson is the best Batman since Michael Keaton, which is a big, big shout, and goes again with the feeling that he's going to be more popular than Batfleck, and this is a better moving forward of the DCEU than the Snyderverse was. So much so that reports suggest that they have already offered Robert Pattinson a contract for Batman 2, worth around £20 million, $20 million to R. Pats himself to put the cowl back on and continue the conversation. Reports go on to suggest that Robert Pattinson is very keen to come back into the Batman mythos. Is eager to do more, wants to put his Batman up against many of the DCEU villains. However, wants it to be a very somber and serious take. Very little in the way of humor and jokes. A very sensible Batman, which plays off of what we are seeing in the film. However, apparently, one of the big stumbling blocks to the Batman 2 plan is the relationship between star and director. Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson reportedly, allegedly, are not on speaking terms.
Oh dear.
And Robert Pattinson is refusing to work with Matt Reeves ever again. $20 million is a lot of ever. In fact, the reports go as far as to say that they hate each other currently. Part of the drive here is the perfectionist nature of Matt Reeves and what he is looking for. And part of it is that Robert Pattinson allegedly disagrees with the direction that Matt Reeves has taken the story in regards to the slightly liberal take he has had on Thomas and Martha Wayne, potentially making them less wholesome in this version, feeding into the Riddler and the secrets that, that we've seen in the trailer, which apparently goes against Robert Pattinson's view of Batman and his motivations. So, lots of stories there, including allegations that, that Robert Pattinson may have actually stormed off set at one point during the filming. But we still are in the run for the Batman to come out March. So we've got a little while to wait yet. And we still may have a Batman 2 being built. So drama between director and star. Apparently there's desire to come back and do this again, albeit maybe not together. And a very, very somber and dark take on Batman, which may or may not muddy some of his origin story. B, you're a huge Batman fan.
Indeed.
You've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
Yep.
How does all of that sound to you? Worrying? Storm in a teacup?
I'm hoping it's a storm in a teacup. I mean, when they announced Rob Pat, I wasn't sure. I'll be brutally honest. I really cannot get past the Twilight stuff with him. But then I watched Tenet, and he was absolutely brilliant in there. It really was a really strong performance. And then came the trailer at DC Fandome.
It's been a while. Been a little while.
Must practice harder, guys. Come on.
And try again, and I'll just cut it all together so it sounds smooth.
Okay. So DC Fandome.
He's not going to do any editing, God's sake. Come on. He can't be asked. This is raw and unscripted, listeners, all right?
Yeah, that's it. I'm going for the real experience. It's not to do with can't be asked.
Oh, sorry, what I meant to say.
It's nothing to do with a, well, nothing to do with a level of commitment to my art. It's because I'm going for the real experience.
That's it. You're a true professional, Jay.
Yeah, you know, grounded in reality. Perfectionist, grounded reality, just like Matt Reeves.
Anyway, so the trailer the trailer was bloody.
Fandom.
It's all right, I'll let it together, it's fine.
You must be listening to the extended cut at the moment, listener. Aren't you lucky, aren't you?
This is the great cut.
Thank you. Thank you for signing up to our Patreon that's given you this free, not free at all. Anyway, sorry, but you were saying.
I was saying.
There's a few listeners right now who's probably looking at the phone thinking, shit, did I sign up to something? What the fuck?
I can't believe I'm giving these fuckers money.
I bought the goddamn t-shirt. Leave me alone.
Imagine if we had a sponsor.
Fando. Anyway.
Good luck with trimming all this up, wouldn't it? Was that about a muncher? Anyway. Anyway, so the trailer was bloody brilliant. Absolutely spot on.
Man, you've everything just gone straight back in so professional. I'm impressed. If Jay did edit this, it would be amazing. It's a real shame that he won't now.
Well, I can't now. You've just talked all over it. It's the only reason I'm not going to is because you've just talked all over it and
that's
ruined
the
it.
Reason.
Continuity. It would just be bouncing around far too much.
Sorry, B. Trailer.
What trailer? Yeah, so the trailer was bloody brilliant.
Fando.
And, you know, the hype ensued, and he looked really, really cool in it. You know, the makeup, you know, it took it back to what Batman was meant to be all about. I mean, we talked about this before, and, you know, we talked about how Batman was meant to be the ultimate detective, and this perhaps is the true reflection of the ultimate detective. Not so much about the gadgets or the, you know, special effects. So this might be the darker Batman than the Dark Knight himself. So I'm really looking forward to it. If it comes off, Batman 2, I'd happily put my money down for a ticket. If I didn't have a Cineworld card, I'd pay.
And what about the potential breakdown in relationship between director and star?
Do you reckon that's just a marketing ploy? Get a little bit of people talking, a little bit of buzz. It's been out the you know, spotlight for a while. I think
potentially.
Storming a teacup.
I mean, they've apparently been butting heads from the very beginning. One of the very first stories was about Robert Pattinson refusing to, you know, get into superhero bod shape. And that apparently was, you know, the first of many arguments about the what looks to be the contrasting visions for Bruce Wayne, Batman in this film. Can the Batman survive two very different visions for the film?
So I'm a huge fan of Pattinson taking on Batman. I'm not at all surprised to hear Warner saying, oh yes, it's the best Batman since sliced bread, because they're not going to come out and say, yeah, we're making a film. It's not going to be as good as the other one, but we're going to try. But also, you know, he is just, I think, an epic actor. I think Bale's an amazing actor. Affleck maybe less so. You know, we had Kilmer and Clooney. You know, there's not a lot of competition, really. But he has a very specific... I can see that Pattinson coming in with a specific vision of what he wants to do. I don't think he does. I mean, with the exception of Twilight, and we'll put Twilight aside for a second, but I don't think he does sequels. So I was quite surprised when he said, oh, he's considering coming back for another one. but yeah, the expectation, I think, from me for this film is it's not going to be the Batman. It's not going to be, you know, the ultimate Batman. Although for some people, I guess it'll be the one that they grow up with or whatever. It's just going to be a weird and wacky take. I'm really here for that. I'm surprised about the superhero bod thing, because you would think that stuff is like contractual, right? Like we're paying you to get into shape or not or whatever, rather than actually the director needs to negotiate that. If the film is a winner and we want more of that, I think the credit there would belong to the director more than the actor. I think you can have amazing actors who can pull out amazing performances and just not do so in the right film with bad directors. So like the Star Wars prequels, you know, you had Ewan McGregor and Natalie Portman and, you know, these kind of amazing actors who are just like wooden as hell, right? And that was Lucas, really. That's on him. That's not the fact that Natalie Portman can't act. So if it is really good, that's Matt Reeves doing. And I'm more interested in seeing Matt Reeves then doing more than sort of shoehorning Pattinson back in and then getting another director and just seeing how it goes and letting it be Pattinson's vision and all of this stuff. you know, I'm not really a fan of the actor who comes in and sort of pushes around the directors and the storytelling, just like in it, just like you know, what people don't really want to work with Ed Norton and things like that. I understand that. That's not your role. If you want to direct a film, go fucking direct a film. I understand when you come in and the director is mega shit. So I think that's what happened with, say, Chris Bale and McGee on Terminator 4. You know, a lot of the conflicts during Fantastic, all that kind of stuff. But actually, if it's all working and coming together, the director is handling more than just the ego of one actor. He's handling the whole cast and the crew and the bloody logistics of it and the editing and all this kind of stuff. So I hope it's a winner. I think Pattinson's an amazing actor. If it's good, I think most of that credit should go to Matt Reeves. And therefore, if there's a sequel, I think the priority would be to get Matt Reeves back in, not Pattinson necessarily. I think we could handle, as we have done in the past, Batman changing actors all of a sudden.
So I was going to ask, and I think you've just kind of clarified it, but I was going to ask then if there is this point of, if this is all true and isn't, you know, Storm in a Teacup or anything like that, and there is an element of, I will only come back if they do not, from either or both sides.
Mm.
Even though this is being touted as the best big screen Batman since the first big screen Batman, you would rather recast that and go and stay true to the director rather than keep the actor and move directors. Because, you know, as you said, we've seen Batman recast. We've also seen the director change drastically as we've gone through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, Ben Affleck is a great actor. George Clooney is a great actor. Those were not great portrayals of Batman.
Academy Award winning best actors.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it... And look, we're mature enough as an audience of comic book movie fans to understand recasting. No one's watching Iron Man 2 going, what the fuck? Why does War Machine look different? We got it. We understood it. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And actually, now that I think about
it... Something happened in the sacred timeline. I had to reset it. And then it might turn up in What If? We all understand.
But, you know, actually the first four Batman films, in theory, were the same Batman, because there was continuity throughout, even when it switched over to Schumacher.
I mean, apart from Harvey Dent.
Yes, well, changing also, from I guess, Billy Dee Williams to as well, right?
Tommy Lee Jones.
I mean, arguably just recast, just like, you know, Bruce Wayne was. Because they mentioned, I'm struggling to remember the actual thing, but they mentioned things in the past. And it was, I think it was in Batman and Robin where they broke into like Arkham and saw the costumes of the old villains and stuff like that. I mean, I certainly watched them thinking it's the same
yeah.
Batman but recast anyway. The audience understands, just like the audience was able to watch Joker and not say, oh shit, why does this guy not look like Jared Leto? Well, it's because it's different. You know, there was a time where they wouldn't want to have a Flash on TV and a Flash on in movies because they thought it would confuse audiences. We've matured past that. There was a time when they'd explain what a EMP was at every single movie. They don't bother anymore. And, you know, I think we're at a time where you can explain that actually a comic book character, it's more about the character than the actor. And, you know, we understand recasting.
And it is really interesting because, you know, we as comic book fans, we get hung up on this quite drastically. However, you know, how many James Bonds have there been?
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone ever turned around and gone, wait a second? So, B, same question to you. If this is legit, and that's huge if, and you have a choice of the director stays or the actor stays, which one would you go for?
That's a really tough question because, I mean, you'd have to respect the director because they've got the vision. They would have been bought online first and then the actors to fit into the director's vision. I would say director. I really would, because you otherwise you get into the situation where you know, what happened with Justice League. I mean, it started off as a movie by Zack Snyder. Well, we all know this. And, you know, God, it ended up
so
being...
so many weeks without talking about Zack Snyder. He just brought us back, V.
Wait, there's something that happened with Zack Snyder's Justice League?
Yeah, don't you know about this? Well, you see. but, you know, you don't want it to become a hot potch of a movie. And I'm rather the director has that vision and is entrusted with making that vision come alive, whether it be one movie, two movie, or three movies. You know, I think as T says, we can accept recasting. We're grown up enough to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting.
Sorry, I just think what was quite cool about the way they set this one up is it was, hey, we're just making a film. You know, for once, we're not trying to make yet another cinematic universe. We're making a movie. Let's see how it goes. Don't, you know, if it's just a film, that's okay. You can tell a one-off story. We saw that with Joker, you know. And we know that some of the biggest difficulties that Warner have had with the DC properties is desperately trying to copy Marvel in the whole, you know, cinematic universe concept, and it's just not worked because they built it on a foundation of Zack Snyder. Just do a film, man. Let this be a film. Let it be great. And then if you think Batman's still got a lot of money in it, make another Batman film. That's okay. It doesn't have to be Pattinson again or Matt Reeves again or anything again, really. Just sort of, you know, see how it goes, I think.
It did feel like from the very beginning, though, that they were rebooting the franchise. You know, you go for someone like R. Patz because he's, you know, younger. You can get 10 years easily out of him in that role, you would hope.
Which brings me to, I mean, you know, we know Marvel actors are brought on for like 10 movie deals and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's weird that R. Patz wouldn't have been optioned straight away for, listen, you're signing up to this for the next, you know, trilogy at the very least. It's weird that we're now having to throw it to, what is it, 20 million, 200 million at you.
But why does it surprise you? I mean, how many times has Warner Brothers dropped the ball on stuff like this? I mean, the fiasco with you know, Wonder Woman 1984, etc. It just goes on and on and on and on. I just have no faith in studio executives there. Sack the board.
And sell it to Marvel.
Yeah.
You really don't need it.
let Foggy ever go. He deserves it.
Well, I mean, he's busy with his Star Wars film, amongst others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting setup. And it does feel, you know, to that point, it does feel as if potentially it was kind of like, and we'll tell a Batman story. And then maybe it's the dailies, maybe it's the story, maybe it's watching it come together. But you know, if these stories are accurate, then it does feel at that point as if someone's gone, well, we can't stop at one, can we?
I mean, those conversations are financial conversations, not creative, you know? And that's a shame. So it's clearly like, this is going to make this much money and therefore want to make more money. And I know the reality of Hollywood, and that's how it operates, and that's fine, because ultimately these are millions and billion dollar films now, and you know, it's all about the money. But at least it should feel a bit like these are artistic decisions. Hey, I've written a one-off movie, or hey, I'm writing towards building a universe, you know?
Yeah.
If I now heard, oh, we're going to make a Joker sequel, what the fuck? That is a complete film. Don't force a sequel on that, you know?
I think they are.
No, piss off. Really?
I'm sure I read somewhere that the script's done.
I think there's rumours of it. And again, the money it was
made, big money.
Made, you know, you understand why they'd go back to it.
Yeah. There was, do you guys watch, you know, Scrubs had a season 9?
Yes.
And it was massively panned, right? And it was like, you didn't have the cast, you didn't have this, you didn't have that, you didn't have anything. And then Bill Lawrence always talked about this. He was really open about it as well. He's like, yeah, because my story was 8 seasons. I did an 8-season story. I finished it. And then I had a chance to offer all of my crew another year's worth of work. So I did. And, you know, I thought I'd make it a spin-off, but the studio said, no, you're still calling it Scrubs Season 9. And he said, fine, because I've created my vision and now I had a chance to pay, you know, keep people employed for longer. So I did. So I get that. I get that, you know, sequels tend to make more money than the originals, regardless of the quality. But yeah. And I also get that it doesn't take away from the original 8 seasons of Scrubs or the original Joker film.
Does it not, though? Because, you know, it becomes complex for me. So Scrubs, I used to love Scrubs and then kind of, you know, fell out of it as it went on. But it is difficult, you know, and same conversation we've had with Game of Thrones.
But see, that's the thing. Game of Thrones was, it wasn't a complete thing, an attack on, because season 5, you know, that wasn't the end of the story, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, but in the sense of it's got to bleed across into season 9, nor is Scrubs. Because you don't have the happy endings. You don't have the, you know, where are they now? As you get to then go and live with them again, albeit only popping in because it's, you know, the new class and blah, blah, blah. Well,
I guess what I mean is you can watch up to season 8 of Scrubs and then, you know, not watch the next one. Whereas Game of Thrones season 5 ends on a cliffhanger, if you know what I mean. So it is, the story is still continuing. It's just badly told, the rest of it, sadly. Or,
are you still with us, or have we triggered PTSD?
Oh, poor me. You know, I still go on to bloody George R. R. Martin's Not a Blog. I don't know. This is just like the masochist in me. Every now and then I'll be like, ooh, any news? Is he going to drop something? But of course he's not. Still. But nothing enrages me more than when he drops posts about, I'm now developing yet another Game of Thrones TV show. Fuck off. Just write your book.
Yeah, he's heavily involved with the prequel, isn't he? Allegedly.
Yes.
I mean, it is his life's work, in fairness. And it's not like he's not writing it. He's hanging out on you know, beaches in Bermuda or whatever. He's like locking himself up in cabins and stuff and trying to... He's just genuinely struggling with it.
I mean, but, you know, so he says.
Well, that's true. I mean, I don't think you'd miss him. I think, you know, if someone saw him on a beach in Hawaii, there'd be stuff on social media. He's very distinct.
With all the money he's made, he could probably rent the beach in Hawaii, though. So
that's very true.
Yet he didn't do anything and lift a finger because of season 9.
Damn, didn't lift a little finger.
Great,
no, but I mean, at that point, it was kind of like, you know, that's their vision. This is my vision.
Yes.
This is where the story moves. Although you've kind of stolen my big surprise twist thing. Yeah.
There's still a reason to buy book 6 when it comes out, actually, which there might not have been if he had known the story fully and told D&D the story. And they just put it on screen before him. Why would we bother?
So do you think that this is, you know, that he really didn't have all of that written? Or do you think that he kind of had a very long draft, which he's then seen play out on TV, realised that everyone hated the ending? He's like, no, it's not done.
I think the fact that he started to write a trilogy. No, he started to write one book that then became a trilogy that then... I really think things are out of his control with the book. He, you know, he's talked about how he's been trying to solve the Myronese knot for years. You know, I don't think it is planned out. I think his characters have taken, because it's character driven, and I think the characters have taken on lives in his mind, and he's desperately trying to figure out how to tell the story and how to put it all together. It isn't, you know, a simple framework that he started with and that he's just, you know, filling in since then.
I think there's an element where he realizes the fandom is never going to be satisfied with whatever he writes. So he is always going to be the guy that bastardized his own thing, because we're back into the world of fandom where whatever story you've written, that's not the story I had in my head. And therefore it's not good. And I think this is one of the reasons why he's like, you know, and the last book will be released after I've died. Because that way, say what the fuck you want about it, I'm not going to care.
Or is it that it just needs to be better than Game of Thrones season whatever?
Yeah, but, you know, there are people who do like that. I'm not many. Not many at all.
Are there? I thought B went around and killed them all. One by one.
They're on my list.
They've all been invited to a wedding. They've been told to wear red. But we shall see what happens with the relationship between Robert Pattinson and Matt Reeves.
That's what we were talking about.
DC Fandom.
Yeah. And I'll edit all that to like a 4-minute conversation.
Yeah.
Now, whilst we would not recommend anyone falling out with the director, we probably should make some recommendations, because the next two topics to discuss are a little bit more, well, it depends on whether you've seen them as to whether you'll want to join in the conversation with us. So we're going to talk about Loki episode 5 as we count down the hours to the series finale. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about Black Widow, which I had the delight of seeing this weekend, in a non-spoiler way. But before all of that, just in case you wish to not hear any of that, we will do our recommendations so that you don't have to have those things spoiled for you. So I'll go first because I've just referenced it. I saw Black Widow this weekend, so I'm going to recommend that. I really enjoyed it. Not so much that I'm plotting my next viewing. But I thought it was good. And you'll hear me talk about this a little bit later on, because spoilers, I've already recorded that bit. But for me, it's the Bourne Identity meets Killing Eve, is kind of the combination. It's more entertaining than it probably has justice to be. But it's also, you know, when we talked previously about films that you can watch, if you were getting to Endgame and, you know, which are the films that you need to see and which are the ones you can skip, this is a skippable film. At this point, at least, it's a skippable film.
So it's more of a standalone.
I mean, you know,
after Endgame. So obviously,
yeah, exactly. So you've seen the character die. So... yeah, it always was going to be very, very neat. You'll remember from my Han Solo experience that I'm not a huge fan of, like, and here's how this got its reason. So, you know, there's an Infinity War callback, which wasn't really needed in any way, shape or form. But yeah, it's a fun little time. It's currently making all of the money. Disney seem to have released figures to say, suggest it made over $60 million in its first weekend on streaming alone.
Wow.
They didn't have to release those numbers. That's interesting.
No, and they haven't on others, but on this one, they felt the need to. And I think part of that is, the see trust us kind of thing. Part of it is to try to make sure that I think Black Widow doesn't look like it's not been a successful, even though it's the biggest post-pandemic film release yet. In the cinemas.
I think Fast Furious 9 might have something to say about that.
Well, you know, different kind of family. but yeah, and it's very funny because I do think that it has benefited from the pandemic in that way. I think it would have been a far lesser box office opening if it was, you know, a few months after Endgame and No Way Home.
Is that when it was due to come out? I can't remember actually.
Yeah.
Right.
So Jay, let me ask you this. So obviously you're recommending it, so you enjoyed it.
Yes.
Would you recommend it having seen it, would you have paid money to go and watch it in the cinema as opposed to watching it in front of?
Yeah, I don't think I've lost anything by watching it on the TV. There's nothing so grandiose or majestic in it that I feel cheated by not watching it on the cinema. But yeah, I mean, I was happy to pay to watch it in the cinema. It's just out of ease, it was on my TV.
Interesting.
But don't delay. Watch it as soon as we finished.
Yes. I'll aim to catch it this weekend, so hopefully have a chat around it next week.
Yeah. So, you know, you'll have a little bit from me in a little while talking about it in kind of broad terms. And then once we have all watched it, we will have a proper chat about it, because there are a few things that are very interesting in regards to the timing of it. So, for instance, this was due to come out before WandaVision, before Falcon and the Winter Soldier, before Loki.
Interesting.
And if that had stayed, then the post-credits scene could have landed quite interestingly differently.
Okay.
So we shall talk about that and everything later. B, what would you like to recommend?
So I'm going to recommend something which is available on Disney right now. Disney Plus, that is. And it's 6 minutes of pure titillation.
Steady.
And it's The Simpsons, The Good, The Bart, and The Loki. And basically, I'm taking this pause business far too seriously. It's a parody on all things Marvel. It is really, really good fun. It's got Mr. Hiddleston himself playing Loki. All right. And it's really quite clever. All the characters are there. Not going to spoil it, because literally it's 6 minutes of your life. It's worth spending just watching this. Go watch it.
Awesome.
Excellent.
That sounds good.
No, I've not watched Simpsons since, properly watched Simpsons for probably decades, decade or so at this point. I have watched the Halloween specials. I recommended them shockingly at Halloween, when they were all kind of gathered up. But what I did notice, and I didn't get round to watching, but what I did notice was they'd done a Star Wars one fairly recently.
They have. The Force Awakens. From its nap.
Yeah. Have you watched that one?
I have.
And how do they compare?
It's not as good as The Good, The Bart, and The Loki.
Why you're recommending this one and not that one, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's very good. And there is a post-credit scene, which is quite clever. And it's very much Loki themed. Oh. So, yeah.
Interesting. I will check that one out, because I can afford to spend 6 minutes on something. T, what are you recommending this week?
I almost want to unrecommend something. So, like, on the first or second show, I recommended Q Squared. And I found
very myself, first recommendation.
There you go. And I found myself sort of, you know, between books recently, and I was like, oh, I'll just grab this one out of nostalgia. And that was maybe a month ago, and I've been trying to read it and struggling to get through it. And it's just not that good a read. And sort of, I was taking excuses to take breaks from it. I picked up comics, picked up a novel, picked up another novel, and then eventually just gave up. So, you know, that yeah, this isn't happening. And that's made me think I am no longer going to recommend things that I read in my early teens, because I really don't fucking remember them that well, because I'm thinking of them with just pure nostalgia without experiencing them recently. But one of the books I picked up whilst avoiding reading Q Squared was Providence by Max Barry. And actually, there was another Max Barry book on my to recommend list. I just didn't get around to it, and I won't now unless I get a chance to reread it, because again, that was an early teens read, called Jennifer Government. But Providence is great. It's a sci-fi book. It's four people on a spaceship headed to battle some aliens. The spaceship is entirely controlled by AI, and the four people are finding out that they have less and less to do on the ship, as well as, you know, no real concept of understanding how any of the decision-making is made. There's sort of flashbacks and explanations of how the ship was even launched, and actually all decision-making ever, including the picking of the crew and whether we go to war or not, being decided by AI. It's a really fun and interesting story, both in that kind of futurology sense of all AI decision-making, in the sci-fi sense of, you know, spaceships and alien battles, but actually just in the kind of people sense of watching these characters find they have less and less to do, and actually the meaning behind their roles of being these astronauts, these soldiers, and actually what is still valuable, what their valuable contribution actually is really interesting. It's very fast paced. I don't think it's a long book, but it's also one that you don't really put down particularly. There's a lot of action. It's really interesting. It's really, really well told. It came out, I think last year. Like, Max Barry took a huge gap and didn't release anything for like a decade, and then suddenly this came out last year. So Providence by Max Barry is my recommendation.
Fantastic. Not one I've heard of. So some point I will have a look at that one as well. If you have no interest in hearing about Loki episode 5 because you haven't caught up yet, then we will wish you farewell at this point. However, T has finally caught up, so all Ooh. Of the conversations T wishes to have about Loki that has been waiting for weeks are now ready to come through. So whilst this is about episode 5, it will be about Loki so far, I would think. But again, if that is of you, then we will speak to you later. However, we are now going to talk about episode 5 of Loki. Episode 5 of Loki took us to the Void, where it was an Easter egg extravaganza, with lots and lots of random things thrown in. A slew of Lokis, all at the world's end.
Loki,
including Richard D. Grant, Crocodile Loki, Kid Loki, and Boastful Loki were the ones we spent the most time with. Before we get into the weirdness of episode 5, plus conversations about what we think is going to happen next, T, you finally caught up. How are you finding, how have you found so far, your Loki experience?
Oh my God, it's so fucking good, guys. It's so fucking good. I was watching it. I watched episodes 1 and 2, and then 3 and 4, and then a few days later, 5. And just sitting there going, how is it so fucking good? How is every episode so fucking good? And just thinking about how Marvel are just killing it in the TV front. I mean, WandaVision had us chatting every single week, like nonstop with theories. And so, you know, Winter Soldier, fine, had its sort of ups and downs, but still overall a good show. And this is just epic. I think episode 3 was the weakest for me.
Interesting.
Which I thought would have been my favorite, actually, because the idea of people spent on the train. It takes a lot of like boxes for me. Not sorry, post-apocalyptic or almost apocalyptic, pre-apocalyptic alien planet. Sorry, that's a lot of that is kind of my bread and butter in terms of what I want to see. But yeah, that's the episode that worked least for me. And also, even weirdly, I thought like the acting was a little bit weaker. So I forgot female Loki's name now. What was her name?
Sylvie.
Sylvie, sorry. So like Sylvie's tantrum just kind of felt a bit out of place, and there were odd little things where it sort of didn't work. But anyway, every other episode, including that one, actually, they've all just been fucking brilliant. And I sort of walked in thinking this is going to be, you know, every episode will be a bit, all right, now we're in the Loki is president world. And oh, yeah, now we're going to fluff out the Loki is Thor Loki. You know, it's going to be just that kind of stuff. Not, and you know, eventually it builds into, and any other TV show would be like, yeah, six seasons in, they now start to build into, ooh, what is all this snuffing out of dimensions all about? Let's go a bit deeper. No, Loki just went straight for the fucking jugular. So good.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you're talking about episode three there, because that's the one that B and I was split on. Mm.
I thought it was great. I really did.
And I struggled with it. It felt a little bit weirdly paced for me.
I was really glad I got to watch them in my chunks of two. Episode one was great, but it was one of those where it just wasn't nearly enough, you know? Desperately itching for more, and I'm so glad I had episode two. Just like I said with WandaVision, how I really understand why they sent the first three episodes out to reviewers as a chunk. That made sense. One and two worked really well together. And I'm glad I got three and four together, because three was a bit disappointing. Straight into four, and then got that, and then five. And also having a break between four and five is great. You know, getting Richard E. Grant right at the end of four, right in the cheesy ass old school comic book costume, you know, and having that to think about for a week. I mean, I was dying to have a conversation with you guys between then, and, you know, just fucking hated missing last week's chat because I just, anyway. Great show. So glad. I'm really sad to hear it's ending, but also, man, it's so good he's getting the time. You know, I was thinking about Loki, and I was thinking about the Hulk, and how, despite not having their own leading film franchises, they've had really, like, developed characters and sort of complete arcs, you know. Hulk through Avengers films and things like, and Thor and all that stuff. And Loki again through just side characters in supporting characters in Avengers and in Thor. Such a compelling character, but I'm just so glad we now got to spend real time with just charming Tom Hiddleston, Loki, and Sylvie, and fucking Owen Wilson. Oh, just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a hell of a run of the episodes, and one of the things we continue to comment on is how funny this is compared to the others. The others had moments of humour, but this is actually funny. So it's quite interesting to kind of see how it was, and you know, they are. The writers and the set designers and everything are obviously having just the most fun with all of this, with the entire experience, with everything they're doing. They're just really enjoying being able to kind of play with these things and work these things through. So yeah, really, really good. Really, really strong. And in episode five, it all kind of gets turned on its head yet again. So episode four, we established that the timekeepers were animatronic versions of, straight out of a Disney ride, coming soon to Disney theme parks around the world, I'm sure. And then we found that being pruned just puts you in the void where Alioth finally will eat you.
Who?
Was it Alioth?
Lilith. Lilith?
No, it wasn't Lilith.
Alioth.
Alioth, that's it. Who's that?
And I was closer. Alioth, Alioth.
Lilith.
Lilith. I was closer.
Sorry, I'm going back to Sabrina days. Sorry. Apologize.
The ghost dog.
Yeah. The demon bear ghost dog thing.
Yeah, but not oh fuck it. Who played ghost dog? Robert's not working. Never mind. Sorry, carry on.
Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker, that's right. Not Forrest Whitaker.
It's a great film.
Such a bizarre movie.
Yeah.
What the fuck was ghost dog?
Well, you know, growing up, I mean, this is a tangent. If you thought Batman to Game of Thrones was
this is our podcast. Just go with it.
So growing up, you know, fan of Wu-Tang Clan, fan of the old kind of, you know, samurai movies, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It made perfect sense.
Yep.
In a whole, it makes no sense.
Yep.
Kind of way.
It kept doing random, like, Art of War quotes and stuff, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was so good. And him and the pigeons on the roof. Love it. So random.
Really was. Anyway.
If we had done recommendations already.
We'd all be rushing to Ghost Dog.
Yeah. Sorry,
what was Loki. The full title of the film? Ghost Dog? Was it Ghost Dog Way of the Samurai or something like that?
Yeah, it was Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai.
Yeah. Oh, God, I think I've still got the DVD. I'm going to have to dig that out at some point. But yes, episode 5 did not have Samurai. It did have every other incarnation of Loki you could possibly imagine, though. And Richard E. Grant was incredible.
He really was.
You know, just absolutely stole the scenes. Just the adoration for Sylvie became bigger and bigger. I think it's really interesting because it's wherever we end with Loki in this, I think he's going to have a greater understanding of his power being pretty close to limitless after watching, you know, the various versions of his power and understanding that they're all technically within him. Mm-hmm. Really bold kind of setup. And then we had the ghost dog, not the way of the samurai, clearing for the little house on the hill.
Mm-hmm. Castle. Yeah.
Yes.
Ooh. Okay.
So, B, how was episode 5 for you?
Oh, it was absolutely frigging awesome. Brilliant. Loved every second. It almost feels like they're too short. It feels like they're trying to cram everything into, 49 minutes or however long it is. But it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I love the acting. The special effects, the story is wonderful. I loved the little, Easter eggs you mentioned. Didn't catch all of them.
Shall we go through some of them, the ones that we saw and jumped out?
Sure. Very good. Go for it.
So the one that I loved more than anything what for me was the Thanos copter.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that first time round. Yep.
So, a very weird part of 70s Marvel. Thanos gets trapped on Earth and travels around in a helicopter with Thanos written on it. Mm. So literally is the Thanos copter. Just such an amazing for no reason pull. Just incredible, absolutely incredible for me. The fact that they've decided to build this into the Marvel Cinematic Universe in somewhere in one of the timelines, this has happened. Just is brilliant in its making no senseness.
They did say Thanos' weapon in Endgame. I guess younger Thanos' weapon was inspired by the Thanoscopter. I guess that was a joke, but still.
What, in the sense it was two blades?
Yeah. They spun it around.
He could spin it and go up in like a helicopter. Yeah, just brilliant. But I suppose the big one was a blink and you miss it, locked in a jar somewhere in the ground.
Throg.
Yeah, Throg.
Did you see this week that allegedly that had got cut down and actually Throg was meant to have a fight scene with Loki and actually had some lines?
Oh, God.
Really? Wow. If only, eh? What if?
Voiced by Thor himself.
That would be good. Oh, that would be so good.
So good, yeah. Oh, missed opportunity, eh?
Still an episode to go.
Oh, this is true. This is true.
So what's the theory then? Who's waiting?
So my theory leading up to this was already proved wrong. I really thought this now was going to be the Avengers Earth. This was the world where Loki had won at the end of the first Avengers movie. And that's where they went to. And that's where I thought we'd see President Loki, but actually Loki sort of goes, oh, when I win, it's kind of shit. So that didn't happen. But what we did get is just Loki's constantly betraying each other. Man, they've got the characterization so right. You got a bunch of Loki's, all they do is constantly betray each other. The only person Loki can fall in love with is himself. It's just like amazing, man. Because what bothered me with his exit in Endgame is I was like, you've had all of this growth during all these films, and it's really hard to put that all away and just go back to where he was at the end of Avengers. And I know there was a little bit of I'll watch the tapes, and I know I die, you know, with Thanos, and that's me, and I get that. But and also, you know, Avengers was a weird journey for him as well. And the way I'm kind of consoling all of that together is he was a bit mad at the start of Avengers because he fell off the Rainbow Bridge. And then when Hulk whipped him around and beat the shit out of him, his personality came back, because that's when he went and made the joke about, you know, asking for the drink or whatever. So he's gone back to slightly quippier Loki. I forgot what I was saying. This is the tangent episode. It doesn't matter. So anyway, sorry, when he Jay was on Scrubs, right?
Yeah, when I call the tangents out, there's about 12 minutes of episode left.
What's the theory for
a couple of things? So who's in the castle? So it's not, we don't think it's President Loki, although everything else has been a Loki.
Mm-hmm.
So is the baddie at the end of this another Loki?
So, I from the outset thought this is prime way of introducing Kang. Mm. I really did. Everything was pointing to Kang. Mm. I still think Kang's going to be somewhere involved in this. Mm. But...
But his name will really be Mephisto.
maybe. But I... You know, it's not going to be a Loki show without Loki doing the bad on someone. So I think it's too lovey-dovey. I think Sylvie is going to do the bad on Loki. And I think you're right. I think Loki is behind all this. It may not be our Loki. It may be a variant Loki, hence why the TVAs have been tracking down all the variant Lokis. And I just have a feeling that this love story is not going to go too well. I don't think it's going to end well, and I don't think it's going to be Kang. I think there'll be a Loki.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it can't be Kang because you've not introduced Kang. And if you end this series on, oh, it was a big surprise, someone else entirely with no connection to the show so far, the series won't stand up on its own. And WandaVision and Winter Soldier and Falcon, they stand up on their own. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they stand up on their own as shows. And this needs to be whatever 7 episodes, you just go and rewatch the 7 episodes, not just like, this is now the tie into Eternals, this is Eternals prequel. I was thinking it'd be like a Thor, because, you know, he's so fucking caught up on Thor, but actually the lack of chat about his brother leading up to this has made me think, no, you know, that's not what the show's about either. So it really has to be Loki. It can't not be. You know, and also the love story can't last because if you think about it too much, it's a bit gross.
Yeah. So the money's been on Kang all the way through. Mm-hmm. We know that he is due to be in Quantumania.
Yeah.
So maybe this is something that kind of feeds into that. But why would you introduce Kang here very quickly only then to kind of have him back in Quantumania? The Loki has been throughout all of this at the heart of it. You know, what Lokis do is survive. You know, it could well be a Loki. I guess the other thing it could be is Immortus.
Oh, another version of Kang.
Yeah. So this is Kang future Kang. Kang himself being from the future, but this is even further future Kang. So it could be that they introduce him and then you kind of see his move towards, because this is the end of time, isn't it? So, you know, you then see him kind of build towards that.
Yeah.
And this is all about maintaining the timeline that creates him as the
supreme. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't Immortus Reed Richardson?
Half brother.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking he's not Franklin. Reed Richards have another one, though. Okay.
So that might not be a bad shout, because if you remember Ravonna saying that everyone gets, what do you call it when they get killed? Purged?
Pruned,
that's it. Pruned, they'll go to the place before the end of time. So that might not be a bad shout, Jay.
You see, I think if you just think about the whole thing is, you know, we always lose, right? Loki keeps losing. And what happens if Loki succeeds, which is what I thought the President Loki story was going to be about. And because it is all about constantly betrayal and he'll keep betraying himself and things like that, and the fact that he's a massive fucking narcissist, I can see him both wanting to have other Lokis in other realities and also not, because they'll just fucking come along and betray me.
But then something that Richard, the classic Loki, said is that they're all there because the survivors. It's what Lokis do, they survive. Right.
So I'm a Loki who has figured out there's a multiverse, right? Mm-hmm. And then by some like amazing whatever, I've actually conquered it. I've got to the top of this ladder, right? So this is the one Loki that's managed to win and take over the TVA. Now, he knows if I can do it, other Lokis can, and therefore other Lokis are going to come, and then we're just fucking endless cycle of betraying each other. So what I've got to do is to start knocking these other Lokis out before they can come and get me. But also, I'm probably too much of a narcissist to actually want to kill myself, so I'm just going to put them into these like random end of time thing where they can just duke it out, but they won't have the resources, i.e. their time enough in a reality to discover their full powers and their potential and blah blah blah, to be able to get to that point where they can also become me and fight me and take me out. It's like that thing around, you know, if there is a bomb that can destroy the multiverse, and the multiverse is infinite and has infinite possibilities, well, then the bomb will have gone off in one of those possibilities and the multiverse will never exist, right? So therefore, that bomb can never go off. It's impossible for it to work if any reality ever exists. It's kind of like that with Loki, right? So if I can do it, there's another world where I can do it. There are like big questions to me, because it only works if it is all lies, if you know what I mean. Because, all right, you've got the what ifs coming later on, but you've had, you know, Doctor Strange going and visiting all the different options and all the different multiversal outcomes. You had all the time travel-y stuff go on. So Doctor Strange did that in Infinity War, and you had all the time travel stuff in Endgame, and, you know, the theories behind it. And it doesn't work in the model of what we're seeing. So it only works if the model that we're being told is a load of bollocks, basically. Yeah. Also, random question. Loki's true form is Blue Giant, right? This Frost is a fake giant. Body. Frost giant, right?
Yeah.
So that, again, leads me to feel like, because, again, it's ego. He always maintains, you know, the form that he likes. And that's why when he supposedly is stripped of his powers, when he's in the TVA, he's still able to retain his form. Because he doesn't want to, you know, the Loki controlling it all, doesn't want to see himself as a Frost Giant. That's the only part of himself he can't stand to see, right? He can see himself look like Tom Hiddleston.
I think we can all understand that. Because I think if all of us had a choice, we'd probably look like Tom Hiddleston.
This is true.
What if it is a Loki at the end of time, and this is all something that plays through however many times, because it's then handed over to the next Loki to run, and that's the win, is you now get to be, you know, in charge at the end of the universe forever, and forever lasts until forever stops, and then the next person comes in and takes their turn to last forever.
Yeah.
And so the whole thing here is about, you know, this is Loki winning, and this is, you know, how Lokis survive, and this is all of that. And it maintains this kind of, you know, timeline that they all fall out of and therefore find their way, and then survival of the fittest to ever gets the chair. And this Loki decides that he doesn't wish to win, which is what deviates, because you've got to think that the timeline's got to split to create the multiverse. This has got to be the event that creates the multiverse, bearing in mind it's all about Nexus events, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So,
but we've already established there's multiverses. Is this where all these Lokis exist?
No, because these were all variants that were then pruned so that the single timeline could go. So there is nowhere else for these to go, because it's all brought back into line.
So it's constantly branching, you know, and as soon as that starts happening, that's why it's the tree analogy, right? That's pruned off, so you just end up it's only one central timeline. As soon as a branch happens, they chop it, you know. I think a lot about, like, how the endings a character deserves, right? So like in Endgame, with the three endings that you had, Natasha had to, for her, it was about red in my ledger. She had to sacrifice herself to save the universe, and she did. You know, same with Tony Stark. Tony had to make the ultimate sacrifice, because his whole thing was, would you ever jump? You know, you'd always find a way around. Would you ever jump on the grenade? And Cap, on the other hand, was always about, you know, he's always giving up his life. So him, his ending was gaining a life. And then I think about Loki, and what is the character's ultimate ending? What is his arc? And I think it is about not saving the world or the universe or the multiverse, but surely it's about family and love for his brother and his mother and things like that. So if we are going to have Loki make some real grand sacrifice, it has to be, does Loki's ultimate good, happy ending, does it end with getting Thor's acceptance and Thor's love?
I think it's redemption. I think his ultimate ending is redemption all the bad he's done, because this whole thing is about Loki, you know, the time jail that he was put into by Morbius was the fact that he was lonely, and it was about him being alone for the rest of time.
Mm.
So I think it's redemption.
And it's about it potentially is about choosing not to win, when this whole thing has always been about you know, Loki's wanting to win and always winning and blah blah blah. So the fact that at the end of this you kind of have a Loki who, you know, chooses not to have his victorious life, chooses to sacrifice that for something or someone else. So that Sylvie can be reestablished. Yeah. Go back and grow up and
get her life back, And maybe, I mean, I wonder if they all lose then their memory since then. And are you effectively pruning, well, you are, current Sylvie to give Sylvie the life that she would have had? Oh, it's good. I mean, all I really want as a happy ending is Mobius on a jet ski.
Mobius
a Marvel character? Because the only Mobius I could think of was the Mobius chair in
He did appear in a comic. I don't know which one. I was part of a Facebook group, and they were talking about Loki, and he does appear in as part of a TVA in a comic.
Yeah, there is a TVA. In fact, it was that I forgot old Kang's name.
Immortus, yes.
Immortus was the head of the TVA.
He was linked to it. Yeah, he was somewhere in there, wasn't he?
See, this is the issue with, because I've been so far behind, I've had to stay off the internet with anything Loki related because I don't want spoilers. I've done no research for this show. Sorry.
Research is overrated.
Well, that's true.
Because I very quickly flick through the pages to see if I can find something that says about where he comes in.
So, okay, so there is a... Yeah, because that name confused me straight away, because I was like, oh, I'm sure that Mobius is, you know, is New God stuff. But cool. What a cast they have as well, man.
Yeah, it's a good
team. And it's mostly like female led, isn't it? So I know the director,
Sylvie and Renslayer.
Mm-hmm.
We've not had much from Miss Minutes yet.
Oh, do you think she plays a part?
Getting Tara Strong to voice Miss Minutes as well—that was epic.
Yeah, it feels a bit light though at the moment, doesn't it?
Well, I loved that bit where she was stalling.
Yeah.
They did that so well. It was just in the voice, and it was just, you know, it was so obvious she was doing it. And just the slight way that the kind of the pauses in it. Excellent.
Yeah, so it could even be like a computer program that's gone rogue. Ultron, maybe.
Maybe. Ultron hiding out at the end of time.
Maybe.
So what do we think? You just said her name, sorry. Gugu Mbatha-Raw's character.
Renslayer,
sorry, yeah. What do we think Renslayer is all about now?
So I'm still kind of tied to the comics. So, you know, in the comics she is an associate of Kang.
Mm.
Is it his girlfriend, or is it just an associate?
I don't know them well enough to comment on their personal lives. I don't know. I think it was. I think it's varied, but okay. I feel safe and comfortable saying associate, and you know, they can define themselves as they wish. So yeah, I think that there's still a link there somewhere. Maybe she creates him. But yeah, I think the link there, it just feels too specific a named character to pick out and, you know, give a that name to. So it's not like, you know, Agnes.
Yeah.
Who suddenly turns out to be Agatha. This is someone who has a history in comics.
So at the very beginning, we both just thought, okay, Renslayer is running the TVA. Like, there's no one above her. And she's, you know, pretending, oh, yeah, I got to go speak to the bosses in this private room where no one else is allowed. Oh, the bosses said this. Oh, I'm sorry. You know. But I don't think that's the case anymore. I think it's more interesting and nuanced than that.
Yeah, she seemed just drastically out of place in the last episode. So even up to episode 4, I thought she was, and the beginning of episode 5, I thought she was in on something. And then as it kind of seemed to become a little bit more unravelly and bizarre-y,
because we saw Hunter B-15's like revelation and realization that, hey, this is all bollocks. So we saw that arc and it was interesting to see it with her. And then when Mobius went through it, it was just like, okay, look, quickly. So it won't be maybe as interesting to see Renslayer come to the realization that, oh, it's just another Loki or whatever it is pulling the strings. Do you know what I mean? So I wonder what her arc is and what.
No. And more. It's the weirdness. So we've got unanswered things like, you know, this other agent who was working for her, who may or may not be her favorite. The high school pen as one of her trophies. So it's whether any of these are going to get paid off or whether
I thought the pen might be from when she proved Mobius, because he was asking
for
the pen a lot.
So there's been variants of Morbius.
No, he's the variant. Do you remember everyone who works for the TV is a variant?
Yeah, but then how did that pen get in there?
So when she went to prune his reality and essentially wipe and recruit him, she took a bit of memorabilia. She took a pen.
Ah, okay. Right, so she
that will be his connection to his, yeah. That's what's happened with all of them. They've all had basically their memory wiped. And that's how Sylvie sort of realized, you know, B-15 had this. Sorry, it wasn't B-15 at the beginning, was it? It was the other. I've forgotten now, but anyway.
Yeah.
The other hunter.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then we've got a gap, I think. I think it's August 11th or something that's What If Lance?
Is there some Star Wars jammed in the middle of all that? Or?
Just the Bad Batch, I think.
Is Masters out? Masters of the Universe?
Revelations would be, but that's, Netflix.
That'll be a one-off drop then, won't it?
Yeah.
Give us some weekly show. Let's keep it up.
I'll be binging that one. So, T, what was it like to binge? Or semi-binge?
It was 2 episodes at a time. And then 1 episode. And I think it was good. I missed having the chat. So I was glad I got to watch episode 2 after episode 1. But then I was desperate to talk to you guys about it. And I was also glad to have episode 4 after 3 because I didn't enjoy 3 as much. So if I had the chat after 3, I think I would have been a slightly lower about the show. So that didn't have to sit with me for as long. But yeah, it's all. But like I said earlier, you know, I fucking regret not being able to have the chat last week, just from the cliffhanger of episode 4. So definitely prefer being able to have a chat around it. Really,
how are you finding the weekly drops now, B?
Frustrating as hell.
But the compromise would have been you would have been sitting here currently without watching any of them.
Yeah, I would have been signing off way before this. Yeah.
And happy in your ignorance?
No. I get it because, you know, I'm now able to take part in a lot of the chats that, you know, the various groups I'm part of. So it's good to be included in all that. But I do find it immensely frustrating. I just wish they'd just drop the whole 6 episodes at once and, you know, I could have binged.
Yeah, I mean, you do get far more out of the conversations because, you know, like with Jupiter's Legacy or any of the others, it would have been a one-shot conversation and then done, whereas this, we continue to walk back and have theories and everything else.
This is true. This is true.
It Speaking is like watching it together. If we were watching it, you know, together, we could talk about it as we watch it. But being in, you know, separate houses, this lets us at least have enough breaks to try.
It's about family.
It is. Barrier. And smoothness. But we will leave it there. We are mere hours away from getting all of the answers and being proven wrong on everything we've just talked about.
It's Mephisto. It's covering the bases.
It was Agatha all along.
But we shall see. We will come back next week and tell you how it all went and talk to you about that and anything else that's going on. Now let's have a brief word from me in a non-spoiler way about Black Widow. As the only one of our gang who's watched Black Widow as of yet, I thought I'd put a couple of minutes down just to talk about the film at this point, really. And we'll discuss it in detail when both B and T have managed to catch it. But given it is all over the place, given it is live, our first Marvel Cinematic Universe film in over a year is now finally live and new content for us all to watch, I thought I'd jump on and have a very brief conversation about my feelings on it. So the timing of this Black Widow film has always been a bit strange. It's always been a little bit weird that given the introduction of this character was around 2010, it was beaten to the punch of being the first female-led superhero film, not only by Wonder Woman, but by Captain Marvel as well. And you know, politics in that's fairly well-recorded with the former Marvel creative director putting an email out about, which was leaked, about the his belief that female-led superhero movies do not draw money. And that obviously got rethought quite drastically following Wonder Woman's rampant success. And you know, I've got to say, out of the characters that we have oncoming with the Eternals, with Shang-Chi, with what's happening next, Black Widow's probably my least interesting of the characters, partly because I know where the story ends. I've seen, spoilers, her death on Voromir. I've seen the Black Widow story from the introduction to the redemption, to being a critical part of the team, to her overall sacrifice for the team. So for me, there's little left in what's to tell, what is there to go through. But this film finds a way to tell a very compelling story in between all of the films. So it's set between Civil War and Infinity War. Picks up with Natasha on the run from Thunderbolt Ross and gang, and has her initially just trying to hide out, just trying to let things go and work through, and then gets pulled into an ensuing adventure. And it's a fairly solid story. It gives a little bit around her background. It gives a little bit around her experience. We get a little bit more on Budapest, depending on which part of the film you're listening to. They didn't really clarify which one overall. And the red in her ledger that Clint Barton saved her from. And we get to meet the quote-unquote family, which is beautifully played by everyone involved. None more so than Florence Pugh and her introduction of Yelena. A really interesting take. If you are a fan of Killing Eve, then you may feel that there's some very strong Jodie Comer Villanelle pulls in this. But as a fan of Killing Eve and Villanelle, I adore it. I love the humour of it. I love the droll and dry nature of the delivery. Her taking the mickey out of Scarlet Widow's superhero landing is you know, one of the laugh out loud parts of the film. And she does a really, really good part. There's also a little bit that I'd like to think is a Dark Knight Returns reference. But, you know, only the writers would be able to confirm that. But it struck to me like it was. The story is a little clunky at points. It's a little techno-y in regards to, oh, we just so happen to have a gadget that allows us to do that. So that's kind of a little bit of what you're kind of working through. But if you're here for a Marvel Universe film, then you're along for the ride. And you know that, you know, there is going to be some kind of MacGuffin that gets you through, be it techno-y or magic-y or whatever else. So you know kind of what you're getting into. The introduction of the Red Room, the understanding of the Black Widow program is pretty cool. We're very much, as we've seen in Falcon and the Winter Soldier and a few others, we're very much into the shadows of the Marvel Cinematic Universe on a lot at the moment. And this very much fits in that kind of play, in that kind of area. And the Red Room is a really interesting kind of dynamic to it. Ray Winston's a really interesting choice to be a Russian military leader, but all right. You know, sometimes he does an accent, which is weird. But you know, overall it's you know, a fun enough little story. I mean, I've got to say that I was a fan of the Bourne films, especially the first three. And this does feel very kind of Bourne meets Killing Eve. And I'm really all right with that combination. It does feel small compared to some of the other Marvel Universe films, but it would do because, you know, we're not talking about, you know, alien armies from space or, you know, demons from the third dimension or anything else. We are talking about it's a spy film overall. So that's what plays through. But it's a good introduction. It's going to get a rousing appreciation and receipt, mainly because of the gap we've had between Marvel movies. It would be really interesting, and we'll never know, but to look at how this film does compared to now versus how it was when it was, you know, only a few months since Spider-Man Far From Home and from Endgame. Because I think that would have suppressed the box office slightly. I think there would have been a belief there that, personally, I think there's a belief there that an out of timeline in regards to out of chronological order Black Widow film probably would have felt fairly missable on the grand scheme of everything. Whereas now, a year and a bit later, everyone's clamoring for new content, especially new Marvel films. I think that's going to give it a nice buoyant bounce all the way up. It's a fun enough movie. It's not going to break my top 10 of Marvel MCU films. I'm not yet jonesing to watch it again in the same way I was with so many others, Guardians of the Galaxy, Doctor Strange to a degree, the Avengers film, you know, so many of them, Iron Man, so many of them that had that automatic want to rewatch kind of reflex. And this doesn't at the time have that. But it's a fun enough film all the way through. It does, as you would imagine, have an end credits scene, which I shall not spoil. But it will be interesting to ponder at a later date when we can talk about it a little bit more openly, the timing. This film was due to go live and be released before WandaVision, before Falcon and the Winter Soldier, before Loki. So it's very, very interesting in a world where this should have come out before Falcon and the Winter Soldier, how it all plays together. And that would have been a very weird tease and build, I think. So that's one for B, T and I to speculate on and talk about on a little bit later down the line when A, they've watched it, because that would help, but B, when we can talk a little bit more open about it and give people a chance to do it. All in all, I struggle with £20 on Disney Plus just because it's you know, additional funding for Disney Plus. But I was comfortable with the fact that it's not one I felt the absolute dire pull to watch in the cinema. And £20, by the time you've taken into account a couple of people plus, you know, popcorn, whatever else, £20 is a fair enough price, I think. I haven't been moved to do this with Mulan or Cruella or others of it, but this is a Marvel film. So I felt, you know, okay with putting the extra money down. Yeah, a good enough time. Glad it's out. Glad that Scarlett Johansson has had an opportunity to fill in some of the gaps in the character, give us a little bit more of an understanding of the Red and the Ledger and some of the stuff that happened before. I didn't really need the origin of the vest in Infinity War, but fair enough. And it does leave a lot of gaps in regards to how it all plays through. Definitely worth your time, definitely worth checking out. And now on to waiting for Shang-Chi, The Suicide Squad, Eternals, and all the other goodness we've got coming out this year. Cannot wait to get back to the cinema to see those three alone feel like films that I want to see in the big screen with the noise so loud, etc., etc. So roll on. But definitely check it out. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good night, one and all. And we will speak to you all again very, very soon. Bye-bye.